You're listening to Black Hastings Speaks, a production of UC Hastings Law and its Center for Racial and Economic Justice. I'm your host, Arika Smith. This series was created in the aftermath of the killings of Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, and George Floyd, and amidst the 2020 uprising sparked by these tragedies. The goals of the project are to foster healing, build connections, encourage systemic change, and deepen empathy on issues of anti-blackness. In this episode, you'll hear Elizabeth McGriff interviewed by Lauren Hampton. They are connected through the UC Hastings Legal Education Opportunity Program, LEOP for short. Elizabeth, who graduated from the college in 1996, directs LEOP and serves as the Equity and Inclusion Advisor to the college. Lauren is a second-year LEOP student. She is also co-president of the Black Law Students Association. Prior to attending law school, she got her master's in public health at UC Berkeley.
So if you think back to when you were applying to law school and then compare that to your actual law school experience and then your post-1L, how would you characterize your experience in general, but in particular as a Black student and a Black female student at Hastings?
You know, I didn't have a lot of expectations coming into law school. I had heard that it was academically rigorous. Even having gone to grad school before law school, people had told me, you know, you'll do more reading than you've ever done before, etc. So I think that I was expecting the classwork itself to be the most difficult thing about my experience, mm-hmm. and not the classroom climate. Mm-hmm. And so while I did well academically, not that it wasn't challenging, because it absolutely was, the biggest challenges I had were some of the discussions with my classmates about certain content, about race and racism, about topics that hit on race, where I was really realizing sort of where I was and how law school is, you know, fairly conservative, and how, you know, a lot of people's views who were my classmates were very conservative. And I think that that's something that I did not expect. And especially coming from, you know, a graduate school where, you know, in public health, especially public health at Berkeley, everyone is really trying to serve the underserved. People are really, you know, they acknowledge their privilege before they speak. They know how to, you know, step up and step back. And so I just really wasn't prepared for the climate. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, having you, having LEOP, having my group of friends, having BALSA as well, definitely got me through, you know, some of those situations, knowing that I wasn't alone. And I think in hindsight, after my first year, I would say that it's those relationships that also helped me be academically successful. It gave me the peace of mind that I needed to go ahead and move forward and make sure that I'm handling my business when it comes to academics.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's it is actually very insightful, particularly with regard to, you know, your comment about how, okay, you're thinking the academics is going to be the challenging thing, mm-hmm. notwithstanding the fact that you didn't really have any expectations, but to be sort of jarred into the reality that that wasn't mm-hmm. the most difficult thing. And that instead, in stark contrast to your experience at UC Berkeley in the public health program, that the conservatism and the perhaps maybe extreme viewpoints of class, mm-hmm. classmates, et cetera, was probably really, I could see where that would be an adjustment. But I am also heartened to hear that you felt that you did have a sufficient community to support yes. you through those experiences, because I do believe strongly, and I always have and I always will, that regardless of one's great cognitive ability, you must have social support in law school. Mm-hmm. And I think you need it, obviously, in other contexts in life, but in law school, for sure, you need that social support. And so it's nice to know that even though our numbers are small, you still had enough of what you needed to manage to get through that rather tough 1L year.
Yes. So we've kind of already felt that, you know, since there is more of us, at least in my class, the class of 2022, that we can do more things. We can take on more responsibility as far as, lobbying for black students, as far as, programming, etc. So I do think that we feel, really almost a sense of obligation to represent for all of the black students and just all the just black culture at school, as in, if we don't do it, it won't get done. If we don't ask for certain things, that they just won't happen on their own. If we want to see certain diversity, equity, inclusion issues, we're going to have to bring them up. And so I think that that is something that we at least feel, even though I know we're working with the administration to help make sure that that is not the case. But on the plus side, I do think that it is such a beautiful thing to walk in to a room, and even though we can't do that right now physically, but to see people who look like you in a law school space, because it is so rare. And as few numbers as law schools have, right, there's even less depending on which jobs you go to. If you're in big law, if you're at certain firms, you see less and less as you continue to move up. And so, I remember the 3Ls telling us last year when we all got in a room together that they were just so pleased to see us all. They're like, "Oh, there's so many of you, and there's like 15 of us," right? And they're like, this is the best thing we've ever seen, right? And they're really excited. And I think, for some of us coming from HBCUs, I went to a PWI, but even then, I didn't realize how rare it was. I didn't realize that we were graduating four. And so we are really, really excited. And myself is personally, I'm so excited to have more black students coming in this incoming year. And I think that it's a great opportunity for us to have solidarity, to continue to show up for one another, and to build on mentoring relationships where in the past, the previous class may have been, had to do more work because there were few of them. Now there's more of us. And now I feel like, some of that work that you were mentioning can be spread out amongst us. So I'm very excited and looking forward to this upcoming year. How do you feel about, having that course be separate as opposed to more integrated with the content, with the bar classes?
I think at that time, I might have felt a little differently about it than I do now, because I went to a very large, very selective, competitive high school, where it was kind of the same thing. If I wanted to have some kind of focused English class that focused on, African American literature, I had to seek that out, and it would be taught by the one English black professor that was there, black teacher. And the same was true. I think that was my same experience at Mills to some extent in terms of having to seek out those kinds of courses. Although I will say there was some level of interdisciplinary instruction at Mills whereby you might experience discussions about race in other contexts other than a race-centered class. And at the time that I was at Hastings, I mean, I wasn't surprised that I had to seek it out because that had just always been my educational reality, save for my experience at the predominantly Black Lutheran middle school I attended. And I also was really blessed to have second, third, and fourth grade teachers who were Black when I was growing up. And they were very intentional about making sure that, race and African American culture were embedded into their curriculum. So as I shifted from those environments into, PWI environments, it just kind of was like, well, that's what you have to do. Not that that made it okay, but it was kind of like, well, this is what you have to do. Today, 27 years hence, I do think that it would be great if we could have curricular offerings where discussions about race and content about race permeated the curriculum to a greater extent than it does now. And I am optimistic that we're going to start to see some of that going forward, because I do think, as you pointed out, how do we go to law school for 3 years and somehow, unless we're intentional, take all these courses for 3 years and never deal with these issues that are so central to what the profession is about? I mean, whether people realize it or not, because I don't care if you're at a top 10 law firm, you're going to have clients who are from different racial backgrounds, who speak different languages. You're going to need that cultural competency, and not just with respect to African Americans, but to all kinds of cultures. So I think that that is, I'm sure there are some law schools that are probably doing a good job on that, but I think most law schools are still very challenged by the prospect of doing that and making dramatic changes to their curricula at this point. So, but I do think there's room for it, and I'm hoping that we'll start to see some changes around that so that it's more of an interdisciplinary thing or something that's already built into various professors' curricula.
I'd like to know what your vision for LEOP is, you know, for this year and perhaps for future years.
I do just naturally tend to be very vision oriented about LEOP. So I have visions and then I try to bring them to fruition, which is really exciting. But it's a part of my mission to really never take my foot off the gas for the program because the potential is just so, it's just endless. So for this year, we have another large class. This is our second year of in recent history of having very large classes. Mm-hmm. So I want to continue to provide a high quality program for students, particularly around the academic piece, to make sure that students are getting what they need so that they can have peak performance. But also, because the students are so amazing, I really would love to see a lot of promotion of LEOP students. Mm-hmm. Whether it's from a social media standpoint or other avenues, I really would like to see that because there's so much goodness and there's so much success and so many accomplishments that people don't know about that I think it's vitally important that people know that because we have so many superstars and I really just want that to be out there. It's like people should know about, you know, these amazing accomplishments. So I'm trying to work on putting some mechanisms in place for that to happen on a regular basis. To the extent students want that and they're comfortable with it. But I think it's really important for the students. I think it helps raise the profile for the program in a positive way. Right? You know, so-and-so had to do that, you know, 200 years ago, so-and-so was out here 300 years ago, you know, going back to get other slaves, right? And bring them back with no technology, no nothing. So I often use extreme examples for myself to stay on course and just to put things in context. And I mean, I think of my heroes, I mean, including inspirational leaders such as Barack Obama. And I think about the extraordinary challenges he faced, not just as a president, but as an African, the first African-American president. And it puts in context what I'm doing on the campus, right? With our 900 students, like, you know, put it in context. But I just think it's important to know that you are fully loaded mm-hmm. and prepared for whatever there is to come. And even if you haven't experienced it before, you have to always know that you are in a situation for a reason and that you have what it takes. And you will surprise yourself time and again at what you're able to accomplish sheerly on the basis of faith and confidence. And I mean, with all due respect, I do occasionally look around at people and in certain positions in this world, right? And I think, well, my goodness, if this person can, you know, pull it together, certainly I can. But I just am generally inspired by others, but really forcing myself to go back time and again and say, well, listen, you know, this seems like a daunting challenge, but look at your track record of what you have accomplished when you didn't necessarily have experience for it, when perhaps no one laid the groundwork for you. You were still able to get in there and be resourceful enough to figure out how to accomplish what you needed to accomplish and in many cases, accomplish way more than you ever thought that you could. And I just always believe that with respect to my students and with respect to myself, that I will take myself places that I have never dreamed of. And I really do believe that on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, I need to tune up every now and then, but at the end of the day, it always comes back to, I know that I'm capable and I know that I wouldn't be here if I wasn't prepared to be here. And when I see the success of my peers, my friends, the students, it just helps you know that success is there and that there is enough to go around. And I refuse to accept this notion that, oh, success is only for certain people or, mm-hmm. oh, there's only so much because we're all here to run our own race. And the reality is that what is meant for you, no one can take away. No matter how much it seems like all the forces of the world are against you, if it's for you, you're going to get it. And it's just as simple as that.
Well, thank you so much, Elizabeth. You are a blessing to me, to all of us, and I'm so thankful that we had this time to spend and to have some of these conversations that are so important to the entire Hastings community.
Well, thank you so much. And you're a blessing to me. It's an everyday gift. And I'm just so proud of where you are, where you've come from, your incredible accomplishments. And I just can't wait to see what you're going to do in the future. I will be watching.
Thank you for listening to Black Hastings Speaks. To hear all of the episodes in this series and learn more about the participants, go to www.uchastings.edu/speak.